Devin Cole is a woman in total control. Unafraid and unashamed, Cole has burst onto the scene through her expertly crafted feminist pop anthems, packaging social truths into repeat-worthy bops. This is the era of fempop, and Devin Cole is an artist you don't want to miss. Join Devin Cole on her Two Shades Blonder tour and see her in Vancouver at the Biltmore Cabaret on March 16th. To find out more and get your tickets, visit admitone.com. That's admitone.com. I should be smitten, but I'm a fiend for the troublesome boy who's driving me wild, keeping me on the tip of my
Welcome to Lethal Refresh.
I'm Danny.
I'm B.
I'm Stuff.
I'm Jay.
Let's get lethal. Let's get refreshed. When it's darkest, we always attract the brightest people.
Baby, you a light. Shift my whole world to the right. Please listen to Lethal Refresh on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Ardor to you and Serviette and
Thank you!
Lethal Refresh, every Monday, 12 to 1 p.m. New music every week.
Reach one, teach one. Take some, yeah, take that one. I had to eat some. Rockin' in my low tie. Yeah.
Is your mom obsessed with Vicks Vapor Rub?
So is Alice.
Are you too obsessed with Vicks Vapor Rub?
So are we.
Tune in to Viva Poru, el ungüento para el alma, every other Thursday at 4 p.m. here at CITR 101.9 FM.
A radio show dedicated to Latin awesomeness and culture. Hosted by yours truly, the one and only
DJ Bruja. And the other one and only
DJ D-Rod.
Featuring music genres like
salsa, sabrosura vintage, bolero, bossa, Latin indie, plus so much more.
Contains a high amount of llama content. DJ D-Rod and DJ Bruja are not responsible for newly found llama obsession.
The Evelyn Salar Center is recruiting volunteers to help design and implement relief initiatives for the downtown Eastside community. If you're looking to get experience relevant to your area of study while helping to support the homeless population of Vancouver, email us at esc.volunteerprogram@vancouver.ca or find our page on the City of Vancouver website under Evelyn Salar Center. Positions are flexible and designed to be convenient to students. Those with an interest in health, communications, or psychology are encouraged to apply.
Hello? It's 6:06 p.m. and it's Thursday, which means that
It's time for the CIT Archive Show. I'm your host, Sophie, and today I am joined by two of our trusty archivists here at the station. One of them is JT, a resident archivist, who was a guest in the show on the first episode.
Hello again.
Hello, JT. And Michael.
What's up, boys?
Jazz hands.
Jazz hands.
I did jazz hands as I said that. So we have a very special episode planned today. We're going to talk about the entire history. Well, as much as we can cram into an hour, right? Because it's a very, there's a lot of lore at the station. But yeah, at the archives, we do a lot of research. We find a lot of little treasures, and we wanted to share some of our finds with you throughout the years, any patterns we've noticed, any cool kind of, I don't know, cool stuff. basically a brief overview of what we found. Yeah. And yeah, before we get started, we would like to acknowledge that we're broadcasting from the traditional, unceded, and ancestral territories of the Musqueam Nation at UBC. And I've been a settler in this land since 2021, and this land has brought me so many opportunities, including this opportunity to share the history of our beloved station here. And history is never in the past, and we must always remain critical of the systems that brought us here. So wherever you're listening from, think of where you are and how you got there.
And shout out to my wife, if you're listening at home,
Cora.
Living on UBC campus and family housing, also on the traditional unceded lands of the Musqueam people.
Hi, Cora.
I have no wife to shout out, but
shall I start?
Please.
Yes,
do.
Take it away, JT.
So when I heard the Archives Collective was going to be talking about the history of CITR, I immediately asked if I could dig into how we got started, because it seemed like a fun bit of challenge to try and dig up that history. And of course, we have our like timelines and stuff, but I wanted to know like a bit of granular information. I wanted to like dig in a bit. So, of course, I'm also an archivist, so JT, the person who's going on a radio show, JT the historian, went to JT the archivist and said, hey, I want to do some research on CITR, like how did it get started? I know it was 1937, 1938, but I want to know more than just what we have in our little history document. Can you like help me find some stuff? And so JT the archivist said, well, we know UBC was founded in 1908. So if you want to know like how things got going, what you want to do is look at the material leading up to 1937, leading up to that period. So go maybe check out the UBC because they were around a bit before we were. Take a look at that material, find things about that. And the important thing to know when you're doing that kind of research, I would say as an archivist, would be to look at the names that we had at the time. So at the time, you wouldn't be looking for CITR because we weren't CITR back then. We were RADSOC or the Radio Society or Varsity Times. So you got to look under those names. And so JT, the historian, went and took a poke around and found something very surprising. Now, bear with me if you say, hey, that's not true, because we'll get there in the
JT
end.
JT knows everything.
I did not know this because
JT knows your social security number.
I do not know your social security number, and please don't tell me it, because I don't want to know. Okay, so what I found was the UBC 1919 Radio Club forms. And I was like, what? That doesn't match up with our history, and I'm pretty sure our history is right. What's going on here? And then I kept looking and I found 1922 Radio Club formed. I'm like, I'm even more confused. Why did they form twice? And then I kept looking and I found a mention of the Radio Society. And then I found a very helpful note from the UBC noting that there were two clubs with very similar names that might be causing some confusion among the readers. It turns out we are not the Radio Club. We are the Radio Society, RADSOC. In fact, our official name is still the Student Radio Society of the University of British Columbia. If you look at our organizational document with the BC government. So we were never the radio club. They were the wireless club. As far as I can know, they were probably like putting together the radios or something. I don't know. I don't know why they formed twice, but I don't need to know because they are not CITR. So I went on with my life and didn't look into their history anymore. What I can tell you is that CITR was in 1937, the varsity time on not our own broadcast, but on CJOR, which was somehow related to CBC, I believe. It's now the peak at CKPK FM. But I'm not going to tell you about that because we actually have a recording from Malcolm Brown, who was around at the time, and he can tell you way better than I can.
Madam Chairman, it's difficult to believe that it was in excess of 50 years ago that radio got going on the campus of the University of BC, period. Radio in those days was a very new media, and there weren't too many commercial stations in Vancouver. And as I recall, that people who had a radio set had to pay a federal license of $5, which money was to subsidize the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, period. Varsity time, of which I was interested, was initiated as a result of restrictions being put on the students and the university by both the government and the Board of Governors. The government wanted to reduce the cap. Their contribution to the university, and the Board of Governors wanted to increase fees by $25 a year and at the same time limit the enrollment of first-year students in order to reduce the size of the student body. The students didn't think this was too good an idea, so naturally, in their usual spirit, set up opposition to it. The problem was that the public's opinion of university students was a bunch of playboys and playgirls. They saw the students during their snake parades downtown disrupting traffic on Saturdays before a big game, and they heard of the frivolities that went on the campus. We decided that we would try using this new media of radio to put over a different image of student life on the campus. As a result, radio station CJOR, with owner-manager George Chandler and Dick Diesbecker, granted us prime time once a week to put over our message. Darwin Baird was our voice, who went on to a successful career in radio broadcasting, political analysis, and he was the backbone of Varsity Time. In our earlier programs, I remember we had Jay Gould, now Mr. Justice Gould, who then president of the Alma Mater Society, give a talk on the serious aspects of student life on the campus. And I'm certain we had the late Gordon Shrum speaking along the same lines. Our programs were made up from postgraduate students doing research, chemistry, physics, agriculture, biology, you
so
name
whenever.
It, and presenting.
So yeah, I really love that recording. It it just sums up how things got started and why things got started a lot better than I feel like I could. And it just, it's great to get to hear that voice mm-hmm. and feel like you're kind of there for a moment. That recording, by the way, was made in 1987, so a year before I was born, which is also pretty cool.
Yeah.
In 1938, moving on with our timeline, and I'm going to pass it on in a moment, but that was when the Radio Society, which was called RadSoc for a bit, officially got started. It moved from Varsity Time because they felt like they had kind of outgrown what they could do with Varsity Time. And I think, Michael, you're going to say a bit about Varsity Time a little bit after that. Sorry, not Varsity Time, RadSoc after that.
Yeah, so what happens from then on is that in 1947, we moved to these really high-tech facilities in Brock Hall. I believe it was one of the best in the, maybe not just in the province, but in the country at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But what's going to happen soon, due to mistakes that run in, that we do in 1948, which is one of the first of a very recurring theme that occurs throughout our history, and sometimes I think even to this date. Due to issues with overspending and issues with our budget, what happened was RadSoc members returned to the station in the fall and found that the doors were locked as a result because we just went way too over budget and we were simply not allowed to do work anymore. Under the leadership of then-President Don Cunliffe, what we were then forced to do was we were reinstated without a budget and we were only broadcasting for 1 hour a day. And also to work with that, what we did was we started running commercials in 1950, and we began doing a 22-week-long broadcasting school with CKWX at the same time. Yeah.
And that was 1950?
That was 1950.
1950.
It's just cool to see. We just keep doing the same thing over and over.
Yeah,
again. But like
history keeps repeating itself.
Yeah, right? But like we keep, you know, we're resourceful. Yeah. We keep finding a way to figure
definitely
things out. Yeah.
Yeah. And so in 1969, when did it become CYVR again?
That's 1969.
That's 1969,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So radio, it's funny because all the sources that I found say Radio Club, but if it weren't for JT...
It's not the Radio Club.
It's not
club.
The same thing.
The Radio Club is something else, and
which
that's a typo.
Probably involved, Michael was theorizing that it's just people that aren't into robotics, right?
Yeah.
Is that what, do we know that?
I don't think it was robotics.
No,
I think it was
like putting
just
together,
like putting together radios and engineering.
Yeah. So it was,
right?
It was the wireless club. So maybe proto-ham radio people.
Right.
If you know, write in, tell us. write in to... Archives Collective.
We have an email.
We have an email, archivescollective@citr.ca, or to our mailbox, Archives Collective, care of CITR. Mm-hmm. I can't remember our full mailing address, but you can find it on the website.
It's on the website.
And
love your
input. We do receive physical mail, or we haven't received physical mail yet. So you
send
would be
us physical
first.
Mail, yay!
But yeah, they were originally the wireless club, mm-hmm. and then they became the radio club.
Yeah,
and that created a great deal of confusion.
Actually,
yeah.
I found this thing. It was on the UBC wiki.
Mm-hmm.
So, the UBC Amateur Radio Society, which was also known as HamSoc, was one of the oldest clubs at UBC. Maybe that's what the radio club was.
Right. You said 1919?
1922 might have happened again.
Well.
But apparently it's...
we're just theorizing at this point.
That's like 100 years
ago. Yeah, but apparently it's not a thing anymore, unfortunately.
I think that would be awesome.
If
we got to restart the radio club.
Yeah. Let us know if you were part of this, please.
Yeah.
Reach out. We would love to know.
Amateur Radio Society, Radio Club, Hands
it is, Off. It is unlikely because anyone who was part of that in 1922.
that's how life goes.
I feel like they were around for a
maybe
while.
Maybe they're children.
I think they only
might
stopped,
know something.
I think they only discontinued more recently, so... I think we can definitely find somebody.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Who wants to talk about why we became CITR?
Oh.
I can.
You want to? We can take turns. You can say a word,
turns.
I can say a word. It's like the making up a story as you go game.
So
take it away, JT.
there were changes to the CRTC regulations, and that's the governing body for radio in Canada, mm-hmm. requiring changes in regulations requiring licensing of carrier current stations.
I was confused by that sentence too, but I think it means that they changed the regulations and they hadn't requiring licensing of carrier current. Yeah.
Let's not worry about it.
Yeah.
In any case, there were changes to regulations, and CYVR needed a license, but they kept operating while they were waiting for their license to be processed because bureaucracy can take some time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just how we continue to operate while we wait for our post-graduation work permits.
Oh, dear.
History repeating itself.
That's true. No, I stopped working, if anybody in IRC is listening in.
I also stopped working. I think you get a grace period. But anyways.
I can confirm that neither of you are having paid employment. You're both my volunteers.
Yes. True, yes. Here's your proof.
We have broken
Canada,
zero rules.
Canada. Yes.
Justin,
in any case, you can't do that. So they got shut down.
Mm-hmm. And then... Okay, this was in January of 1974. Mm. Decisions, what is, okay, we...
They approved them. That's the decision. So the decision
74 number-260. Yeah. They approved the license and then they were back in full force as Thunderbird Radio CITR. I wonder how... Do we know when this happened?
1974.
Yeah, but how shortly after it was shut down in January? Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess we can find...
We can find that out, potentially.
What?
You go ahead, JT.
Yeah, so as far as I could tell, digging into the documents, we had to change our name because we got shut down.
I found it. Oh, it was in July 1974.
January. So a few months.
Wonderful.
Half a year.
Good sleuthing.
That's crazy. That is insane.
Everyone is seeing research in practice.
Oh, yeah. So July 1974 is when we became CITR officially.
Also, I don't think we mentioned, in 1969, this is very important, Radstock moves to new state-of-the-art studios in the newly completed Student Union building, and that's when we became CYVR.
Okay.
In 1969.
We skipped that. And the Student Union building is what we know today as the Life building, correct? Is it the same one?
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. Possibly.
I'm pretty sure.
I've also heard rumors that there was a different building that we were in that burnt down, which is not the Life building. And I've concluded this because the Life building is still standing.
We have tangible evidence. Maybe we can look into that.
With tangible. Maybe it's like all a hologram. It's like AR.
It never existed. It was a collective dream.
Exactly. It's just like the collective subconscious.
Cue dark theme one. Is that dark one?
Dark intro one.
Guard intro one.
Dark intro one.
CITR goes cable through Vancouver first at 89.5, then 95.9, then 100. I don't know what that means.
So you can actually pick us up on... cable radio, which is something
I still don't know how that works, but
that most people don't have access to. Mm-hmm. But at a location like UBC, if you have access to cable radio, you can pick up CITR that way as well as on 101.9 FM.
Right. And then we became an FM, or we applied for an FM broadcast
with the CRTC.
CRTC that same year, 1975. And 1980, CITR changes from an AMS club to an AMS service organization, which makes sense given that they were providing a very valuable service to the students of UBC.
But unfortunately, we were kind of sidetracked with our whole FM thing.
Right.
The Department of Communication froze our last FM channel in the city. And so... But eventually, it came through the next year because our low-power FM license got approved on September 14th, 1981.
Right.
Yeah, we did that. Also, we joined 1981 was a big year, honestly, now that we look at it.
A lot going on. Yeah, it was like a renaissance.
That's when we incorporated as a society. So that's
exactly.
when
yeah, that makes
we
sense.
we have a like government of BC documenting document saying we are a society. Like this exactly. is an official document.
That's when
that happened. That's so cool.
That's when we joined the NCRA too. The National Campus Radio Organization and also the Western Association of Broadcasters as well. And then the year after that, on April 1st, 1982, I feel like we did this very specifically. On April 1st, 1982, we began broadcasting at 49 watts in mono at 101.9 FM.
Mm-hmm.
And what was our first song?
Dancing in the Streets by Martha Reeves and the Vandellas. Do we want to listen to it?
Yes, please.
Heck yeah.
but she won't ever fall. 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 Falling, 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 love with a stranger. But she won't ever fall in love with a stranger. But she won't ever fall in love with a stranger. But she won't ever fall in love.
Love Machine by Red Herring. And who is Red Herring, Michael?
Red Herring, notably, is the very first winner of Shindig in 1984. The very first Shindig was held in 1984 at the Savoy. The finale was at the Savoy on 6 Powell Street. But very important to note before that is that in 1983 was when we published our very first issue of Discorder magazine.
Woo!
Yeah, shout out Discorder. But interestingly, so I found this in an article from a guy called Grant Lawrence about, it was for the 35th anniversary of Shindig. And so apparently what was going on was for about 5 to 6 years, we had a show called The Hot Air Show at UBC's Pit Pub, which was kind of like its own Battle of the Bands thing. But it very unceremoniously ended because in 1983, there was a little band called the Gargoyles, and they were one of the finalists for Shindig, for the Hot Air Show in 1983. And it ended with the band urinating on the dance floor during their performance.
A single member, which...
It's referred to as they pissed all over the
band. Oh, it was all of them?
I assume so.
Write it and
honestly,
tell us.
I feel like it would be. I feel like you'd be like a bad bandmate if the rest of your bandmates were peeing on the floor
and you just didn't join in.
That's just not solidarity.
Right. It's not punk enough.
It's not punk enough.
Everybody has to do
peeing
it.
On the floor is not on the punk, floor with guys. Them.
Peeing. I disagree.
Peeing on in the outhouse inside the building.
Cool and punk in 1984, but don't do it in 2025. Would not recommend. We have trees and bushes and alleyways
and toilets.
Toilets are the last thing that came to mind.
Sanitation here.
Anyway,
is great.
So how did that lead
to
Shindig?
The Pit Pub was very unhappy with that. Who would have thought? And that pretty much ended the Hot Air Show. And so the vice president of CITR at the time, Dave Ball, and his friend Jim Main were having beers with their friend Janet Forsyth, whose family owned the Railway Club and recently bought the Savoy in Gastown.
Mm.
And what they did was, in an attempt to expand CITR's reach, they pitched the idea of a downtown battle of the bands to Janet, and that was the beginning of Shindig, essentially. So what happened was the president came up with the name and the logo and apparently photocopied the show's logo out of a book from the library. We did not get sued.
Wait, photocopied which show's logo? Shindig?
Yeah.
What?
They just photocopied it out of a logo.
Do we still use it?
Oh, no, we don't.
I think it's shifted
over
time.
Cool.
And also, he took the name from an old American teen dance show in the 60s.
This is hilarious.
American
Thank
teen
you.
Dance show.
Yeah. And the rules were you had to be an amateur band playing original music and you must have no recording contract, which I believe are still the rules, right?
I actually don't know the specific rules, but that lines up pretty clearly. Mm-hmm. It's like we pick newer bands who haven't had a lot of chance to have.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's a multi-day event.
It's a multi-day event.
Was it always like that?
It was massively popular. It was every, it seems like it was every Monday.
Wow.
During the fall of 1984. And it was so successful that in the first year we did it twice.
Wow.
Wow. That's a lot of plans.
We did it in the fall of 1984 and in the spring of 1985.
Mm-hmm.
And then only we did start doing it once a year in 1986.
I bet that sounds exhausting.
Yeah. And I mean, now we have Google Forms, which is how people apply, bands apply. And how would that, would you call, send a letter to the station?
Yeah.
Seems like a process. I feel bad. It's a fun one, though.
I feel like the staff would just die if we tried
fun
doing that
fact now. From back in the 80s, mm-hmm. some of the earlier issues have like three people just doing typing for Discord or magazine. So indeed, there were a lot of people dealing with the fact that things were all in print.
Wow.
And,
love print media.
Fun fact also.
Yeah.
The 1990 winners Windwalker apparently brought out a pig's head from a garbage bag that he bought at Save-On Meats and began hacking at it with a machete, with the only illumination in the room being a strobe light through a fog machine.
Holy.
He then also chopped through his guitar's patch cord and his own mic cable, and then he completed his performance by throwing the mutilated pig's head into the crowd.
Wait, did you say this was the winner?
Yes, this was the winner.
Okay.
And this was after they won?
This was during their performance. This was during their semifinal.
So that's
set.
What made them...
Yeah.
Huh.
If you thought peeing on stage was punk...
Guys.
Okay.
Guys, you guys got to modernize. Anyway. And then in 1985, we proposed a new licensing plan to use a directional radio antenna to allow the use of 101.9... both in Vancouver and Victoria at a much higher power. But more notably, guys, we were picked by Seattle's Rocket magazine as one of the top 20 publications in the world.
In the world!
The only Canadian publication to get that honor.
Yep.
Whoa.
Yeah.
1989, on Groundhog Day, apparently.
Guys, we've been doing this.
CITR goes higher power, whatever that means, to 1,800 watts, which means that we cover more...
We have a broader range of area.
Of area. Apparently, there was a giant balloon release and a giant groundhog gooch, whatever that means.
What?
Quite festive. But, more notably, the first song that we played was Have Not Been the Same by Slow, which we're going to listen to right now.
We'll be right back.
that was Have Not Been the Same by Slow. Slow is a Canadian punk rock band. And that was the first song that aired when we went higher power.
Yeah, to with our broader range.
Yeah, just a disclaimer. We're basing our research off a very loosely structured, well, a structured timeline that highlights like specific things about the history of the station. And mm-hmm. there's not a lot of context to certain things. And we're just kind of like trying to see what we find interesting and trying to go off and research specific things. So this is us attempting.
Not academic research, folks. No, it's we're not. Just having fun on
we're
the
just
radio.
Having fun. Yeah. And thank you for tuning in if you're listening right now. What happens next? 1990. So apparently in 1990, CITR hosted DJ Sound War Chapter 1, which was Vancouver's first rap competition. And a lot of contestants came from LA. And CITR suffered the infamous Public Enemy controversy, which we didn't really know what it was till we looked into it. And apparently...
Apparently, we played, I don't know if we played it all in full, but we played Fear of a Black Planet by Public Enemy when it was released in 1990, and it was an incredibly controversial at the time, mm-hmm. well, mainly because Public Enemy has a reputation for being a very staunchly, like, they take a very blunt approach with mm-hmm. dealing with race relations at the time in the United States, and even the way it is today. And a lot of it was not well received. It was incredibly political for the time, and it's rightly heralded as one of the greatest albums of all time today, but at the time it was criticized with,
it
was incredibly controversial
for sure.
And at the same time, we also put Ice-T Flipping the Bird on the cover of Discorder magazine in the same year.
So fair enough.
That is actual research. Thank you.
That is actual research.
And do we want to listen to a Public Enemy song?
I think we have to keep moving because
let's do it.
We love Fight the Power. We were going to play Fight the Power. If you would like, go home and play Fight the Power.
Go home
go
and listen
home
to
and
it.
Go home and play Fight the Power. Yeah. If you're at home already, just listen to our show
while we talk.
And then play Fight the Power.
Yeah. Or you can also do that in order.
Fight the Power while you're listening to this. Mm-hmm.
Okay, this was my favorite fact, so I asked to talk about it. We got a website in 1994, which, by the way, the World Wide Web had existed since 1989. And I think, Michael, you said it wasn't even available.
It was only open to the public, apparently, in 1993.
So we've been on the internet since, or sorry, we've been on the World Wide Web mm-hmm. since it was first around. Discorder magazine has been online as a thing that you can read there in some form or another since around 2002, which means Discorder magazine has been online since I was like 14. People keep talking about going digital after COVID. We really actually went the opposite. We're mostly not having our digital editions since COVID. We mostly have our physical editions. Pre-COVID, we had all of our digital stuff.
We're getting to it.
Yeah.
We're getting to it.
Okay.
And then in the year 2000... we started broadcasting into the web, so you would have been able to access.
You can currently listen to us live online.
Yeah.
Most people
are. And that started in the year 2000. Most people probably are. And now you can listen wherever you are in the world, which is pretty awesome.
If you want to listen to us online and you're not at the moment, go to CITR.ca and click listen.
I also forgot to mention earlier that the snippet that you heard of Malcolm Brown speaking about his experience as a founding member of CITR, you can access those in the open collection online, and that's also linked on the archives site.
I haven't included that in the archives yet because I only discovered it during my research for this show.
Oh,
you guys
well,
got an exclusive
now
scoop.
Now you know that you can access. Yeah, if you just look up UBC Open Collections, you can browse different collections.
Yeah. Breaking news.
There's so much info that's just
that
available.
Actually, yeah, it is on the archives
resource.
Page under just our audio collections.
There you go. Oh,
you're
okay.
Right.
Yeah.
It is the CITR audio collection, I believe. Yes, you
gorgeous.
Are correct.
Well, yeah, so you can listen to little bits of history, of radio history.
Yeah.
And then Michael found that in 2007, we started podcasting.
Yeah, we became one of the first campus or community radio stations to offer podcasting.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Wait, so we just adopted podcasting when it started?
Basically, yeah.
Basically, yeah.
And you know what we're doing now? Adopting print media when it's getting excited again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're so cool.
We're so cool.
I say that in the dorkiest way possible.
God, you're so cool.
I promise.
I promise.
And then what did we do next?
If this is not a great PSA for you guys, if you guys want to be at the forefront of campus community and arts, come to CITR or B Square. Be there or B Square.
Come to CITR or B Square. Did jazz hands, as Michael said
jazz
that,
hands
by the
as
way.
Hell. Also, it's just, name one place on campus that's more fun to hang around. You can't.
The pit.
After we just found out some guy peed in there, are you kidding me?
That was
on.
A never joke. Going there again.
Never.
That was a joke.
Do not.
And we also got an Instagram account early.
In November 2012.
2012.
I didn't even know Instagram was around in 2012.
Yeah, and that was like around formed. The time it. When was it? When did Instagram become a thing?
Instagram was formed on October 6, 2010.
Okay,
so we were also an early adopter of Instagram.
I guess so.
We were earlier. Yeah.
I, on the other hand, have only started having an Instagram account this year.
What?
Good for you.
Well, I only got one because that's what everyone else at the station does.
I get you get like you get it's to a certain point where
institutional culture.
You kind of have to stay in touch. And the word Instagram first appeared in Discorder in November 2013. And it wasn't under an article or anything like that, to my surprise. It was under a Shindig ad, which was to be hosted at the Rickshaw, and it just said, add us on Instagram, and it was a Rickshaw's
That's really
Instagram
cool.
handle. Yeah. But
good
the account
find.
Was formed on 2012.
And then,
in 2015, thanks to the work of a former student of the UBC Library and Archival Studies Master's Program, which I'm a part of, and working with the UBC Digitization Center, everything from Discorder Magazine between the very beginning in 1983 and 2015, and all of our audio collections, which was mostly our PSAs, our promotions, all of that material, it got digitized as part of a huge digitization Woo-hoo. Project. It's all available on Open Collections. If you go to CITR.ca and click on the archives link, I have links to that stuff there so you can find it,
mm-hmm.
which is honestly has been the basis of this whole project, is promoting the fact that everyone can access that material online, and it is an amazing collection. I wanted to talk about that. I was very excited.
It is so
Thank
exciting.
You.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great tool to have. It's not perfect, but it does the job.
It's
the
not
job.
Perfect,
very
but
well.
It does
also,
the job.
We are, can we say it?
What?
The new website.
Oh, yeah.
We are expecting a new website at some point
website,
in the near future.
In the near future. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so,
a
if you thought this was cool already, it's going to get even better.
It's even cooler, we promise.
Yeah. The UI is going to be way better.
Mm-hmm.
New and improved. It will drastically improve your standard of living just by accessing your skin
then,
clear. And then in 2022, in 2023.
Oh, what do you got?
In June 2023, I think this was apparent to all people that are probably tuning into this. In June 2023, the Canadian federal government passed Bill C-18, or the Online News Act, which would require dominant digital news intermediaries like Google and Meta to pay Canadian newsrooms for the use of their journalism. Now, what this initially seems like a great idea, but in response to this, Google and Meta just announced that they will no longer share Canadian news on their platforms, including Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. And that was a big problem for us because as a result of that, we had to shut down our initial account, which was CITR Discorder. And as a result, we pivoted to the Instagram account that we now use, which is...
Fanta Records.
Exactly.
Do we know where that came from, the name? Fanta Records?
Fanta Records is our record label. We have a record label. It's Fanta Records. Okay. Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
Wait, but like, where'd the name come from?
I don't know where the name came from.
Yeah.
Okay. I do not know all lore.
Wait, so when did we start having a record label? When did that come to be, do we know?
I cannot tell you that. I was just focused on when this all started.
It was...
More lore.
Wait, Fanta Records.
Well, you look that up. Mm-hmm. Why don't I give the final date that I put down on...
Yes, JT. Take it away.
So, at the end of 2024, our lovely Sophie here... met with the station executive to form the Archives Collective, which is now speaking to you over the radio. And I'm so excited for them. I'm just dropping in. I'm really happy to be here, though.
What do you mean? You're the
You're
guy.
A pillar to this.
You're the guy.
JT, you're the guy.
Aw, shucks. You're sweet.
You're that guy.
Yeah. Wow.
And that's where we are now.
And that's where we are. I'm having kind of like a moment here.
A moment here?
So, if
like
you,
having gone through all this history and now we're sitting here.
Can I do a quick promotion?
Yes.
Please.
So, for any members of the CITR Discorder community, if you are a current member, you can always drop by and say hi to us. And we do have drop-in hours Tuesdays and Fridays. You can come in and look at the Discorder magazine collection.
2 to 4 p.m.
2 to 4 p.m. Mm-hmm. You can also always email archives@citr.ca if you ever want to research the history of the organization. And this goes out to the broader community as well who are listening. Archivists are kind of like librarians, but for material that is a little harder to put on a shelf neatly. Mm-hmm. So when you go to an archivist and ask for help finding things, we say, hey, here is, I mean, if it's a physical material, here's some boxes. Or if it's digital material, here's a set of links, and we get you started on your trip to discover fun stuff.
The world of the archives.
Like we did today, and that was super fun.
That was super fun.
It was kind of nice getting to take my archives hat off and like just get to be a researcher for a bit. That's my background. Like I did a BA.
Yeah, you're so good.
More history oriented. So it's been fun getting to be the researcher
like we
again
said,
for a bit.
Michael and I were saying that you're an omniscient being.
Yeah. I'm definitely non-omniscient.
An omniscient deity.
We're spreading so much misinformation.
You're spreading so much misinformation.
This is what got us off Instagram in the first place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The archives are an antidote to doom scrolling. Yeah. If you ever feel like your eyes, your poor eyes are kind of drained and you want your eyeballs to take it easy. Come to the archives. Come look at cool. Come smell it. Come smell newspaper.
Different decades smell different.
You will regain.
That should
your
be
vision.
The next episode theme. An analysis of how the
newspaper
smell of paper.
That would be fun.
That would be good.
It looks
changes
like
over
we're
time.
Almost out of time though.
3 minutes left.
Yeah.
So.
Oh wait, maybe we can play Fight the Power.
I think you're supposed to wrap up a few moments before so the next person could get on.
I think we should wrap up. But thank you, everybody. You listening. We appreciate you. We love you. Thank you for tuning in and for listening to us here at the station having fun. Thank you, Michael, and thank you, JT.
Thank you.
For all your wisdom. And, we will see you not next week, but the week after, Thursday, 6 to 7 p.m.,
Awesome.
Awesome. Have a good night.
Night.